This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
4 years in a row, I have picked a bad team to be good the next year. My pick is New England.
The Patriots recipe is exactly the same as Washington last year. The Washington thing did not make sense. Then you look at it, it's like terrible coaching staff. All of a sudden, they had a good coaching staff. They all of a sudden had a good quarterback. The year before, they didn't. They spent a bunch of money on free agents. They did well in the draft. And they played an easy schedule. So we know what the recipe is. We look at it every year. It's reasonable to go from 4 wins to 10. Like we see it every year. We're always like, oh, who saw this coming? We always see it coming. This happens every year, and it's always about a schedule and a coach and a QB.
Bill Simmons on the Patriots. Colin Cowherd as well. They are maybe going to be one of these, you know, plucky teams.
Is the term plucky?
Sure, I was going to say, like, the team everyone loves to pick to go from bad to good. What's the word for that?
Worst to first?
Yeah, but they're not going to first.
Most improved?
Yeah. Everyone's going to pick them. More people are going to pick them than they probably should, but there might be some good reasons why.
Patriots are going to find a way to make the Jets underrated. Watch. Watch.
Okay.
That will be the conversation, like, August 15th on FS1. Are the Jets underrated now?
Mm-hmm. I participated in reverse AFC power rankings yesterday with Mike Schoep, and I believe we put the Jets third from the bottom. So New England signs Stephon Diggs.
Yep.
Let's start with the emotional angle of it.
Sure.
How do you expect Bills fans to, like, this will turn it back up on Diggs and, like, the Diggs hate, if you will, the fact that he is now in the division and signing with New England? Like, I personally don't have any ill will towards him going there. I don't even know that he really truly wanted to go there.
He probably just couldn't stay out of the money.
Got paid $69 million.
Yeah, 22, 26 guaranteed.
On a multi-year contract off a torn ACL.
Yeah.
I got more money
than Chris Godwin per year.
They basically handed him a blank check, which was the story about New England and Godwin. They finally got a receiver to say yes to them.
Mm-hmm.
After 5 years of trying Diggs before, and Cooper, and Ayuk. And Ayuk, remember, I think part of the story was they had offered San Francisco what they wanted.
Ayuk said nope.
But Ayuk said, I'm not signing an extension there, so that killed the trade.
Yep.
So they couldn't get anybody to say yes to them. They finally got Diggs to do it. But again, the context is he's coming off a torn ACL. We're late in free agency here, and he's at an advanced age, and you gave him $70 million over 3 years.
Yeah.
So
it's a heist.
Do we care? Like, is anyone extra mad at him because he went to New England? Or is it just going to be natural? The fact that he's going to be in the division means that we're going to see him twice a year, and he's going to come back to Buffalo once a year, and he'll probably catch some passes, and he's a fiery dude, so maybe he'll jaw at the Bills, and it'll kind of naturally become, you know, a thing, him playing the Bills.
Well, first let me say this. And part of this could just be the bad blood that the fan base currently has with the team. But the city that still gets up and gets out to boo Jack Eichel is going the this might have to mean that it's Bills Patriots home opener. Like in primetime.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Sunday night football or the Monday night game of week one. Because
ooh, is that good? Bills hosting Patriots on like Monday night
to start the year.
Mm-hmm. Division right out of the gates.
Yeah, I think that he will be relentlessly booed every time he touches the ball, when he runs out of the stadium, out of the tunnel. So let's just get that. That's what I think should happen. By the way, here's my take on Diggs. Is I don't know that I feel differently today or yesterday after the signing than I did necessarily when the trade to Houston first happened.
Mm-hmm.
But where I'm now at with Diggs is I get the sense or feel like everything other teams, other people, national media had said about him that everyone in this city defended him against, which was the reputation of being a diva, being a locker room cancer, and, quote, character issues. And I almost still hesitate to get to he has character issues or flaws. But I have a really hard time accepting the fact that what he did, how he did it to a team that is firmly in a Super Bowl window with him being a part of that, big part of that, and a team that rewarded him when they didn't have to, gave him a huge contract extension, and had a bail the first year it kicked in. And the things he did, the distraction he became, all of this because they weren't doing enough to make him feel like they were serious about winning. They weren't doing enough for Diggs. He gets traded to Houston and lasts half the season, tears his ACL. That's not his fault. But doesn't it say a little something that Houston wasn't at all interested in bringing him back? And maybe the injury's part of it.
Well, and the money's probably a part of it,
They immediately traded for Christian Kirk. It's the first move they could make. They got his replacement. Mm-hmm. First move they could do, we're replacing you.
They've never talked at all like anything. They've only talked about him as a leader glowingly.
Of course they did. Because what they wanted to do is the same thing any team that would have Diggs wants to do. Yeah. We want to make sure that what you guys are saying, here's proof that it's not true. Mm-hmm. Look at it. He's a great teammate. He's this, he's that. Well, listen, you can post that stuff on Twitter in August. But when it came down to it and you had an opportunity to bring him back, with your second number two receiver, probably not slated to play this season, you said, nah, I'm good. We're good. Thank you. And just this whole concept of this is about winning. I need you guys to prove to me you're really all about winning. And then you sign with the Patriots?
Yeah.
Like, I get it. They gave you something you couldn't refuse. I will never hammer an athlete for taking the money, especially when the money's probably way above whatever you... They were bidding against themselves. No one else was going to give anything close to that to Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
No one is nearly as desperate for the position as the New England Patriots. But, man, it just comes from a place where I'm thinking to myself, what a fraud. I mean, he's a fraud. Because you're going to sit here and talk about it's everybody else's fault that we haven't won. Everybody else's fault. Even though every single playoff game, I'm a no-show. Every big moment that required Stephon Diggs to be Stephon Diggs, he no-showed. Drops in the biggest moments.
Mm-hmm.
And then blaming his quarterback and showing him up every opportunity he could.
He did that one time. In front of everybody, he did it one time.
After he did the drop, he went like this to his quarterback. Like, hey, yeah, you missed me.
Yeah. If that's what you think, that's what that was.
I think what it comes down to is it's just why emotional attachment to athletes and thinking they're these people that, you know, who they are on surface level, it rubbed me so wrong yesterday thinking about the fact of the context of why he acted the way he did here. In a perfect situation, a team and organization catered to him. He was the biggest thing this organization had done in two decades was trading for Stephon Diggs. Yep. And they treated him that way.
Mm-hmm.
Rolled out the red carpet. Oh, you don't want to be at OTAs? Oh, don't worry about it. No, you're good. Go do your stuff in the offseason. We don't care. Just come here and be a superstar. We love you. We'll defend you in the media. We'll get every opportunity we have to defend you, our fans, and our organization will.
Well,
and how you treated everybody here, including the teammates, because every teammate that played with Diggs last year, 2 years ago, this last summer, took an opportunity to basically say, yeah, this place is way better without him.
Yeah, but then the moment, man, you saw the reaction to those guys when they saw him for the first time when they came back to Houston. Like, Tyrell Shavers is almost in tears seeing Diggs again for the first time in Houston.
Sure.
The way I look back on it, and this is what I think New England is going to get from him for now, is what the other thing the Bills, you want to say, tasked him to do, or the other thing he became, was he became the alpha of that room.
Yeah.
He became the leader of that room, his position group especially, but of the entire offense. Who was the guy against the Jets when Allen is sitting on the sidelines red-faced because he's throwing interception after interception that is coming over to him and giving him a pep talk like, come on, dude, let's go. You get into this game. Who's the guy that's coming over to him and being a leader in that moment? It was Diggs. But that moment got shared 1/100th of the amount of times that the Bengals moment got shared.
Because it was in the playoffs. And you're on the sidelines.
Right.
He's making it about himself.
And that's why I think he is definitely, there's no doubt, that there's enough smoke about it that he's a lot to handle behind the scenes. But I think most of it comes from the fact that he wants to be the alpha of the room. He naturally is that type of personality.
It's not about winning. It's about him. He went to the only place.
That's the thing that's weird to me about this move. I'm not going to go all the way to call him a fraud, but I understand why you'd say that because that's always how I've thought of him. That his biggest problem here was the guy just can't take not winning. Like, he is on a level of some of the greatest competitors ever where you just, it's almost to a fault. And in fact, in this instance, you might say it is. He just can't handle the losing. He's got to win. That's how I've thought of him, and that's how he has carried himself.
Tried to portray.
And then he got to free agency, and he went to New England, which I don't know that you got to work hard to say that they could be a good team, but you got to work very hard to say that they are anything near winning a Super Bowl. And that's supposed to be for him what it's all about. And you signed up for a team where a success is just squeaking into the playoffs.
I think that there is a greater desire to be the alpha than there is to win. And I view this now in hindsight to say this wasn't about his refusal to lose. It was about the hierarchy that he saw himself crumbling. He saw himself taking a backseat to the quarterback for the first time in his career here. And what did he do? Literally forced his way out. Made a team in a Super Bowl window take a $45 million dead cap hit.
Because
they'd rather pay that money than have you on this team anymore. So to me, and then a little thing for me is they went from a team that had like eight captains to two.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't think that's not something that also has a little bit of like Diggs dust.
I think you're not giving enough credit, though, to the Bills initiating a lot of that. In that, there was a quote in a story from before the season. I'm forgetting who wrote it. That maybe it was Tim Graham, that let me check that before I attribute that to him, that basically ownership wanted to see Allen become more of a leader.
Mm-hmm.
That they want to task him with that. So even if I could set aside all of Diggs' motivation to the side here for a moment and just know, well, he has been the leader of that room. He has been the guy. Like, again, he goes over to Allen and gives pep talks, not the other way around. If you want Allen to be more of the leader of that room, of that unit, then even if you don't care what Diggs is, what do you do? What Diggs wants, what do? You might trade him anyway. Because you might feel like Allen can never fully become that and become the full leader if the other guy who's been that is still in the room. He might cede to Diggs in that way. I think there is Bill's motivation on that front too. And I've always said that a lot of that was clear the deck so that Josh can be the guy.
Where in any other organization, find me one example, where a wide receiver has more to say about who can lead and when they can lead than Diggs in Buffalo. Did Jerry Rice, the greatest wide receiver of all time, the greatest, did he step on Steve Young when he took over for the greatest quarterback of all time previous? No, he didn't.
But it depends.
T.O. didn't even do that.
It depends on the type of personality you have at quarterback already, right? Like, Allen, it would be easier for somebody to take that role of being the intense leader when the quarterback just wants to be one of the guys. And that has always been Allen's mantra, really, until this year, which was just one of the boys. It was not until this season where it really was, okay, you got to be more than that. You got to be more than just one of the guys.
But why does it take you removing another leader on your team in order for him to elevate? Why, in any scenario, would it not be, if you're a real leader on this team and you care about the success of your quarterback, would you have to, like, you couldn't put aside your own desire to be the alpha to prop up the most important player in the organization? Wherever he goes, whether it was in Minnesota or here or Houston, he will never be the most important player in an organization because he's not a quarterback.
Right.
That takes a little self-awareness.
Yeah, that does.
And the idea that the Bills looked at it as our only way to make Josh Allen a better leader is by getting rid of his best offensive weapon says way more about Diggs than it does about Allen. It says more to me about the person there, because that's why I use the word fraud, is if it's really about winning, if it truly, truly is the desire or the need to win, you absolutely do everything you can to prop up the quarterback, not do what he did.
Which was what?
Which was force his way out.
Again, like, I think that is overstated. I'm not saying he didn't want to go. The Bills got paid.
He spent the entire previous offseason.
The Bills
tweeting and being a distraction, not showing up and then showing up.
I'm saying is if all of that didn't happen, they probably would have traded him anyway.
I disagree.
He was the least efficient wide receiver in football for 8 games, and someone came and offered them a second-round pick for a 30-year-old wide receiver. Who says no to that?
I don't think he's on the mark. I don't think anyone's reaching out to the Bills if the previous offseason didn't happen.
That might be the difference. That might be right.
No one's even reaching out because he's in year. He would be entering year 2 of his extension.
But to me, like, there is enough argument that they cashed out. Aside all of this, they cashed out at the right time because he was aging. He was a player that it was becoming more and more clear he's got to move to the slot. And that's exactly what he did when he got to Houston. He's got to move to the inside because the wheels on those deep balls, Matt Harmon, when he charts all his route success rate, you started to see, instead of everything being in the green, those couple of routes at the top are starting to look orange.
But
he's starting to become below average at the go route, at the deep post, and the deep comeback. Some of those routes are starting to come back. And, okay, he might be a guy that has to go to the slot more. Well, we've got Khalil Shakir.
Yeah.
And we like him a lot. So,
but can't both of these things be true? Can't both of it be? I totally agree with you.
They could both be
true.
They
walked away from the table at the absolute perfect time. And they got a premium asset for it.
That's the other part of it to me that is always that's left unsaid too much, is that if you look back on the history of wide receivers that age on that contract when they get dealt. How much they go for?
Yeah.
It's day three picks.
They got
almost every time it's a day three pick.
60% better than Amari Cooper went for a sixth.
Because think about how Houston looks back on that trade. They're not happy with that trade.
No.
They got half a year. I mean, even if he had played the whole year, you know, I guess depends how what you do in the playoffs, but they're not happy with it at all.
No.
They got 1 year, not even a full
they
year.
They got eight games of
a guy who did really good in those 8 games, but they gave up a second round pick to do it.
Yep. And now they have no offensive linemen and they need to draft offensive linemen.
That's why he shouldn't have cost that much. He should not have cost a second round
pick.
And the price definitely factors in as well. So now, like, he goes to New England. To me, before we get to like what the Patriots are, I do like it for them a lot, but there is definitely risk. I can look up, Evan Lazar had this number yesterday. One number that I look at once in a while is ESPN's open score. How good is a receiver just straight up at getting open? A.J. Brown was number one in the league last year. Stephon Diggs was number two in the league. Second best open score in the NFL. Even that, though, there's risk because you don't know if he's going to be able to do that again. Because not only is he getting a year older, and at that age, sometimes it happens quick. You don't know how fast the decline is going to come. On top of that, he's coming off a torn ACL. So the age, the injury, that's a lot of risk, which is why, you know, contracts are kind of whatever now, right? Like, you can push the money wherever you want. They're a lot more flexible than we've really talked about them being. But giving a commitment like that to a player that carries that risk, it speaks of their desperation for 5 years to never get a receiver. That they can't get anybody to say yes to them. They had to give a deal like that to a guy that they have no idea what he's going to look like in year two or three. The upside of it, I like for them. I just don't know if it's going to happen. The upside to me, like, their whole offseason has been pretty nice, right? Like, Vrabel is a real coach,
yep.
And he's a professional, and the culture that he brings, and they added to the defense, right? They spent more money this offseason than anybody. They add Milton Williams.
They had the most money. Yeah.
They did have the most money. But what was the one thing they hadn't succeeded in? Surrounding their young quarterback,
mm-hmm.
who looked really good in year one, with adequate weapons to take the next step. For me, when they add Diggs, I'm seeing a few of this from New England people that, oh, this is like when Diggs went to Buffalo.
No, it is not.
Even they might admit like he's not as good as he was then, but this is not the Diggs move. In fact, that's to me isn't to say this isn't helpful. To me, Diggs going to New England is Beasley coming to Buffalo.
Totally.
It is your underneath safety option, veteran
totally.
Receiver that's there as a trustworthy guy in the inside. He is their Beasley. He is not their Diggs.
I might argue he's their Sanders.
Or that. That's fine. Those are close enough, I think, right? The difference is, though, when Sanders was here at the end, he could get open still downfield and on the outside. And again, that's to me going to be the biggest question mark with Diggs. He didn't get asked to do that in Houston last year. And the last time we saw him do it in Buffalo, it was super inefficient. He got a ton of targets in that second half of Joe Brady's interim year, and he was like the least efficient receiver in football. Like, I don't know if he can play on the outside like that anymore. But maybe you're right. Maybe what Sanders wasn't an elite player, so maybe he has that in there.
And I also, like, I don't see him walking. What did Beasley have his first year, his first full season? 145 targets or something?
He had some big target
That's
years.
Not happening for Diggs.
Cole Beasley, let's see. 2019 with the Bills, he had 106 targets.
And then the next year was when he went off.
67 yards.
Right?
The next year he had 82 catches for 967 yards.
Yeah. I don't see those numbers.
Yeah. 778 and 6 touchdowns, though, I could see. That's Beasley's first year?
Yeah.
Because all they're looking for with him, I think, is give me a professional receiver that is going to be in the slot and produce with my young quarterback. They still, though, are missing the top guy on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get to that. 803-0550 is the phone number. Jay, if you stay on hold, we'll get to you. On Diggs going to New England. If you want to play the revisionist history game, we could, of course, do that, too. I want to get to, though, what it does for New England in the AFC East. What the whole offseason does. Not just Diggs. Diggs is just kind of maybe their cherry on top. The bigger, more impactful moves they've made have already happened. 803-0550 is the phone number. It's Joe DiBiase, Nate Geary. This is WGR.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Benson in behind the goal. Zetterlund can't handle him in front. Thompson scores! Zach Benson does the work and Tage Thompson with the finish. 3-2 Buffalo.
It's one of your Firth moments of the game. For all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. The Sabres win last night over the Ottawa Senators. Jacob Bernard Docker scoring his first as a Sabre in that game. Good morning. It's a... Might have woke up with some snow in your car.
Don't like that.
It was only enough snow, though, like, with my automatic starter. By the time I got to my car, it was all melted off. But I could see it on my wife's car.
Mine was, like, powdery. It went off right away. Like, it just blew right off.
Yeah.
That typical end-of-the-year snow.
Yeah.
End-of-the-winter snow.
Hopefully that is going to be it. I'm almost afraid to look at the weather report, though, because it's been a little chillier, and I don't even want to see a snowflake. Not even the icon. I don't want to see the icon of the snowflake. 803-0550 is the phone number. We got into it on Diggs in the last segment. You said he doesn't change your opinion on New England. What was your opinion on New England, though? Like, because for me, they're on the way. I don't think they're near competing with the Bills for the division yet, but I liked Drake May a lot in his rookie year, and they added a lot in the offseason. I think they probably upgraded their head coach, and even if Diggs is a lesser version of himself, they probably just upgraded themselves at receiver. I'll be very curious to see what they do with their first-round pick. They pick at 4. So I think they're on the right path. I think they are, to me, Miami. It's Miami's last stand. Like, to me, if they don't win this year, the coach is getting fired and Tyreek Hill is out of there. The Jets, Justin Fields, like, I'm not taking that too seriously. New England is the one, to me, that, like, within a couple of years, within even 2 years, I feel like they'll be the biggest headache.
So, here's my thoughts on New England, and again, this is separate from Diggs, is I think they dramatically lifted their floor this offseason by going from, I think, not a very good head coach to a coach with a very high floor. I think he has a very clear, distinct ceiling, and I don't think that ceiling is an actual contender.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're going to run the ball a lot, and they're not going to spread it out. They're going to do what they did in Tennessee, right? It's play defense. We're going to run the football, and it's not going to matter really who the quarterback is. If I'm being honest, like, are we under some impression they're going to be a spread, and you know, Drake May's going to be running all over the place, making plays off schedule? I don't at all.
I don't know. I think probably not, but because Vrabel did not run an offense like that in Tennessee. Who was his coordinator though in Tennessee? It was Arthur Smith. Who is a lot of play action, under center, running the ball, and they did have Derrick Henry.
Who's their coordinator?
Josh McDaniels again.
That's right. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of that.
Yeah.
He's going to be playing under center.
Yeah. They do have a lot of receivers. They don't have a lot
of
great receivers.
They have a ton of receivers.
They're all the same kind of, right?
Yeah.
DeMario Douglas is, like, pretty good. Boutte is pretty good.
It's fine.
I don't think Polk is very good. Jalen Polk, who they drafted in the second round last year, used to be on our wide receiver big board back here. Glad the Bills didn't do that. He looks like the one that might not be able to play. And then they have pick 4, which I know we just like they have receivers. They don't have a guy, though, that wins outside.
They don't have an alpha? Is that what you're saying?
They don't have an alpha number one.
Mm-hmm.
Travis Hunter? You give me Drake May dropping back to pass with Diggs in the slot and Travis Hunter out wide, and I feel like they could be onto something. A lot of that to me is I like May. I like May a lot.
Have they signed an offensive lineman?
That is a great question.
I don't think they have.
I'll find that out.
Maybe they have one. They signed one. That was the worst offensive line in football last year.
New England?
Yes.
Yeah, he was under pressure all the time. It's what even made May's season even more impressive.
So
that he was able to do anything with,
like literally the worst offensive line in football. I think that they can't draft Travis Hunter.
They signed Morgan Moses to a three-year deal.
Well, 36 years old, three-year deal.
They signed Garrett Bradbury, the former center from Minnesota.
Who's not good. Yep.
And they signed a guard to a one-year deal.
So
like a smaller deal.
They really aren't going to be much better on their offensive line. They have to take the kid from LSU, Will Campbell.
Okay.
They don't have a choice.
Right, because you don't think Hunter will be there in the first place.
I think if he's there, they have to take offensive line.
All right.
And I think they will. Look at the coach. They're going to draft trenches.
Yeah.
Probably for the foreseeable future.
I'm going to be a little hesitant to just declare they can be a playoff team next year. If they, like, cause again, I think Diggs is underneath. I think Diggs is in the slot. Right now, Mac Hollins might be their number one outside receiver.
He might be.
And we like Mac Hollins, but come on, you got to have a better target than that out there. Dave in Buffalo is next up on the show. What's up, Dave?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just looking at what this probably means for the Bills, mostly it means it shows how Vrabel is really a good coach. Vrabel, I think, really is bringing a winning attitude to his team. Vrabel likely, by acquiring folks like Hollins and folks like Diggs, is going to tell the team, you know, this is how this team won, and this is their ethic, and this is what they do, and we need to have our ethic, and we need to do our thing. And then we'll see what Diggs 2.0, Rex is more Diggs 3.0 or 4.0 looks like, and that's what we're going to put up with. But mostly I think for us it shows that New England is probably a good year away from really being competitive with us. I mean, any given Sunday, any team can beat any team, so you have to take New England seriously when you play them next year every single game. But I think the prospects of them actually beating us out of the East next time are quite unlikely for a new coach. Mm-hmm. Then I think you also go to the Jets, and the Jets are, I don't know how many years away the Jets are. I mean, Joe Namath was the last great quarterback they had, and we'll see what the Jets do after they fired everybody on their team. And in Miami goes as far basically as Tua's health, and given Tua's health background, I don't think they're competitive next year either. So
yep.
The Bills, you know, come into this season as probably the odds-on favorite to win the division. So it's interesting in that if you went to the pundits last year, the Bills were coming into last year as, you know, you're going to have to retool and figure this out. There's going to be a step back, and it was completely different. So the Bills are just looking for ways to beat Kansas City, and I think that's where we still are.
Yeah, thanks, Dave, for the call. It is a little interesting, like Vrabel and Glenn, the two teams that just hired coaches, are they playing copycat a little bit? That they've seen the culture and the consistency that McDermott has brought to the Bills, and they didn't go for, you know, the 35-year-old play caller to come in and be their head coach. They brought in guys that they would think are going to come in and, like, all the nonsense that you've had in the building, like, we're done with that. That was the first thing Aaron Glenn did when he got to New York, wasn't it? He met with Aaron Rodgers and was like, if you're staying here, you're doing everything you're supposed to. You're not going to Egypt in the middle of training camp to go do drugs. You're gonna be here getting practice reps and doing everything we ask of you. And he left. Or got cut, I should say. And with Vrabel, we know Vrabel is all that. So, yeah, a little interesting, the two coaching hires that happened this summer. I'm with you, though, Dave. Like, I think New England is more than a year away. But at the end of the day, it's all going to come down to how good's the quarterback. Right? That's 80% of it. How good's the quarterback? And how good are you at surrounding him with what he needs? And as you just pointed out, like, maybe the offensive line is still going to be a struggle. And that'll be tough for him. The good thing about what New England has, though, that's different than their last guy. Mac Jones, Pro Bowl year in his rookie season. They make the playoffs. And then instant regression and completely unravels and he's out of there. He was very immobile.
Yes.
Any problems they had up front, he was toast. He was getting sacked. Or he was being forced into picks. If you saw what May did last year, he's got wheels. And he's smart about it. I feel like he is one of these guys. Allen is the best at it. Jackson is one of the best at it. And there are a bunch of others who are very good at this. How good are you when you're faced with pressure? How good are you at knowing when to escape, when to get rid of the ball quick? Are you athletic enough to get away in the first place? And one thing that does impress me about May is in those situations, he's got it. His scramble rate is very high. But again, he's a good enough athlete where 400 yards rushing last year. So a lot of it's going to be how good is Drake May? And if he's only if he's only pretty good, then you might not have much to worry about in the division. If he's great, then they might be a headache year in and year out. Would you predict he's better than Tua right now? He'll be better than Tua. Because that's Tua. Tua was, oh, he turned into a pretty good quarterback. And then eventually was, okay, you guys are going too far with this. Are we going to get to that point with New England fans? Eventually, Miami fans went too far, and they thought, oh, number one in the league in passing yards, he's just as good. And up here, we're like, yeah, no, he's not. Is New England going to get to that point where they think their guy's just as good? Or on the same tier? Maybe not just as good.
I think they probably won't be as good as Tua because he just does not have the supporting cast that Tua does.
Not yet. We'll see. 803-0550 is the phone number. New England picking fourth. Some backup quarterback trivia when we come back. And we've got Jonathan Peterlin coming up 8 o'clock on Cleveland, who with Russell Wilson being signed away in New York, might be the most desperate quarterback situation that we have in the league right now. All that ahead, Jody Biasi, it's Nate Geary. This is WGR. All right, we got some instant trivia here, back quarterback style. Before we get to that, let's give away some tickets. Caller 5 or 6 to 716-221-4WGR. Wins a 4-pack of tickets to the Buffalo Bisons opening day game Friday in 2 days, March 28th. 205 first pitch against the Rochester Red Wings. Visit Bisons.com for tickets. 5 and 6 or 5 or 6?
5 and 6. You'll win if you're caller 5.
Okay, 5 and 6.
You'll win if you're caller 5, and you'll win if you're caller 6.
Gotcha. If you're caller 5, you are going to win.
Yes.
Okay. Not like Josh gets to pick who he likes more, 5 or 6. All right, backup quarterback trivia. Let's just, Inside the NBA plays a game called Who He Play For. We're going to play a version of that. Who He Play For. Where did the backup quarterbacks in the league go?
Okay.
Where did Zach Wilson go?
Denver.
No.
What do you mean?
This offseason. This offseason. Where did Zach Wilson
go? Oh, Miami.
Miami. Where did Cooper Rush go? Former Cowboys backup quarterback Cooper Rush. Where is he now? I think he signed a multi-year deal, too. I saw the number. I'm like, that's what a backup quarterback's getting paid to? I'm like, okay, that's not.
Washington?
Nope. You are very close geographically, though.
Not Baltimore.
Baltimore.
Really?
Cooper Rush is now the backup quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens.
That is interesting.
It's a very different style than
I would say
They've usually had mobile backups. He's not.
Marginally different styles.
Where did Gardner Minshew go?
Kansas City.
Oh, I think I said that earlier, didn't I? Minshew's in Kansas City. Where is Jacoby Brissett?
He signed?
He signed. He's on a team. Where did Jacoby Brissett end up?
Dallas?
Nope. So you can get it within 3.
Chicago?
No. It would be
Seattle.
It's a team where he would never start unless it's an injury.
Arizona,
correct. Brissett is in Arizona. Where did Mac Jones head off to? He is no longer in Jacksonville. Where's Mac Jones?
McCorkle. Not Indy, because Indy got Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones, yep. Who's going to compete for the starting job?
It's not Washington, right?
Not Washington.
McCorkle.
Mariota stayed in Washington.
That's right. Where did McCorkle go? Green Bay?
Nope. Green Bay right now is still Malik Willis.
That's right. He looked good for them when he had a play last year. Seattle.
No, but you got the right division.
Rams?
Nope.
49ers. That's right. I knew that. I did know that.
49ers.
Because I saw a tweet. Shanahan finally got the guy he really wanted.
Am I...
As Trey Lance signs a contract for the CFL.
Am I being too disrespectful to Brock Purdy if I feel like Mac Jones would be just as good as Brock Purdy?
In that system?
In that offense? Well, actually...
Yes, you are.
We got to hit a break.
You're being disrespectful. Yeah. That's okay.
The Niners system might not be the Niners system anymore. They've kind of blown it up.
Did they?
Debo's gone.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of the defensive stuff more so, I guess. Yeah, no, the system is the system, right? McCaffrey, Achilles injuries.
Achilles injuries, two of them.
They traded Jordan Mason away, the number two back. When we come back, Jonathan Peterlin from The Fan in Cleveland. What are the Browns going to do with quarterback? Pickett or somebody else? We'll get to it with him when we come back here on WGR.